Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
I'm going to take these Post-it notes.
Oh, sorry about putting Post-it notes in your book. Is that a faux pas for library people? They are pressure-sensitive adhesives. They do come out quite easily.
No, it's not a faux pas.
It's better than me like writing in ink and highlighter.
For sure.
Saying, this book is stupid. Why did you lend it to me?
And they have to come out before the book goes back on the shelf.
But oh, did you give me a library book?
No.
I thought this was your personal copy.
You brought up the faux pas with library people thing.
Oh, but when I return something to the library...
You take the Post-its out?
I take them out, whereas it's to a friend.
Well,
I'm like, screw you.
Yeah, why did you not take out the Post-its?
I just forgot.
You decided to make me do it.
I'm a douche monkey.
You've had the Post-it notes in this for so long that it looks like it's part of the book.
But it could be a compliment to you that the book you lent me was so engaging and inspiring that I had to mock certain passages.
Yeah, we did a podcast on this.
We did.
Now, you had a very different experience with the DVD.
Yes, I experienced, anal seepage as a result of this.
Why you gotta go to the toilet humor right away?
Because I'm tired, and that'll at least wake me up.
So, what's this movie, Pete?
This is a David Lynch film called Lost Highway, starring Bill Pullman, Patricia Arquette, and Balthazar Getty. I remember seeing Balthazar Getty in Brothers and Sisters with Sally Field. Did you ever watch
it? I don't know that
movie. He's actually good. I like him. I think he's a good actor. Actually, I think Patricia Arquette and Bill Pullman. Also, one of my favorite actors, Robert Loggia.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Robert Loggia. But the film just didn't do it for me.
Let me read the description on the back.
Indeed.
Haunting sexuality, ricochet action, and fleeting murderous shadows await you on a journey that begins and ends on the Lost Highway. The successful jazz musician whose marriage is on the rocks, the man in black who threatens to expose him, the young mechanic with links to a powerful mobster, the mobster's moll who knows what she wants and the people who can get it for her. These are the riders on the Lost Highway, trapped in the... I gotta admit, I don't even recognize this description. This is not really the movie.
It sounds like you're making it up.
Trapped in their worlds of desire, destiny, and unknown destination, where the truth is always just a short way further down the road. What's not? Okay. Featuring a star-studded soundtrack and an incredible cast, including Bill Pullman from Independence Day, Patricia Arquette from Medium... Oh, poor Patricia Arquette.
You didn't like Medium?
Balthazar Getty, Robert Blake, and Robert Loggia. Lost Highway is a powerful, sensual, and extraordinary movie experience from renowned director David Lynch, Blue Velvet, and Twin Peaks. Now, first off, they dropped the Oxford comma on that last sentence, so fuck them. Fuck them to death.
Spoken like an anal retentive library person.
Focus features can go fuck themselves. Okay.
Now that we're picking on the film, Bill Pullman is portrayed as a tenor saxophone player, but at the beginning, the riff he's playing appears to be in the alto or soprano range.
Okay, that is weak sauce if you're going to use that to make make fun of the movie.
And I am willing to allow poetic license. So to me, that did not ruin it for me.
Yeah, that should have nothing to do with your
enjoyment
of the film.
What ruined it for me is there, what did they call it? Riveting sensuality? What was the description?
Well, let's go ahead and leave the description alone.
Was Patricia Arquette's boobs. That's really what it was. It was not riveting sensuality. They did it a couple times, and there were a lot of shadows. And here's what I found. At the beginning of the film, when there's a lot of dark, murderous shadows, as they're referring to, if you played the film at 2 or 4 times speed, really didn't make much of a difference. Frankly, it was better at times 2 or times 4, because there was a lot of Bill Pullman standing in the shadows, looking to the left, looking to the right, going, ooh. I mean, what was the point of that?
Okay, well, let me ask you this. And this obviously is a leading or aggressive question, but...
I'll allow it.
If you were listening to a symphony and it had long stretches of sort of contemplative, almost soundscape, would you say, I could have sped that up and it wouldn't have made much difference?
If they were good passages, no.
Well, what makes a good passage? You know, we can hold off on that because we're clearly headed towards what is art and why is art. So,
and that's what we're talking about. This film. You consider this film what, an art film?
Well, art film is a way that people classify movies.
What is an art film?
An art film is a film that can only play in art theaters.
Okay, and that's actually as an engineer, I like that practical definition. And I think of the art film. There's one in where I used to live over in Decatur. Isn't there like a Decatur Arts Theater or something? Where
there's a Midtown Arts Cinema. There is a Plaza Theater. This is headed out toward Decatur.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's... I don't think there's a movie theater
Oh, no,
Decatur.
It's not Decatur. It's... where did I used to live? I used to live by...
where did you used to live?
You know, like La Vista, that area.
Down... Oh, Toco Hills.
Yeah, by Toco Hills, yeah.
So there was... Oh,
And there's one near there.
The Terra.
The Terra, yeah. So...
Terra is kind of an art
house
theater.
I like an art film. I watch films with subtitles.
But listen, let's move away from using the word art, because like when you were saying, this is artsy-fartsy, you know, a couple podcasts ago, or many podcasts ago, mm-hmm. art film or art, artistic or whatever, mm-hmm. can often be used just to push aside the challenges to the form or challenges to convention or mm-hmm. anything like that. So you watch this movie and it did not pull you in. It did not make you...
No, actually,
you didn't
it frightened
enjoy the
me.
Experience.
It's for Robert Blake in like this white face just showing up going, I've been to your house. Oh my God.
Well, isn't that...
It was a horrific film.
We've met before, haven't we?
I've been to your house.
It was at your house. In fact, I'm there right now. That's crazy, man.
Yeah, that was
Here.
Weird, but...
Call me.
But...
So, what... What did the weirdness do for you?
I guess I tried to get into it, but I don't understand the message, the point, the thing they're trying to say. I understood what they were trying to say in 2001, A Space Odyssey, and to me that was an artsy film, very strange. You had weird, you know, the big baby's
head. When you were watching
2001,
though, did you feel like as soon as the sun comes up on the planes, did you mm-hmm. feel like you understood the message? Or you know,
no, it took you a while.
Yeah, the ape stuff
But I
happened
watched the and, whole film, yeah. and then by the time Robert Blake showed up the second time, I'm like, what the hell are these people drinking?
Did you try to understand it?
I tried. What are you saying? I didn't try?
No, I'm not saying that you didn't try. I'm just saying that you probably didn't try.
I mean, you're implying I was sitting around drinking a lot of Schlitz malt liquor with a bunch of
Well, you told me that you
unintellectual
you
friends
sped
going
it up, and it wasn't any different.
Well,
so
no,
I did. Really
I watched it, and then I went back, and then I sped it up. No, because at the beginning it was just shadows, and it was so slow. I mean, it was just.
That was a little Star Warsy there, ain't there?
It was very strange.
Okay, I mean, so you watched it. It just didn't ring for you at all.
It didn't ring for me at all.
Was there anything in it that you remember as being affecting for you?
I mean, it was weird that Robert Blake showed up at the party and said, I've been here, so I'm there now. And he called him up and he was there. And obviously that's representative. That was not literal.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to figure out, who is Robert Blake? Mephistopheles, Prince of Darkness? Is this a Faustian thing? I don't know who he was. Did he make a deal with the devil to get out of...
What's your general idea of how our brains work? And I don't mean brain. Okay, let me say that again. How do you think of the self, Pete? What's your understanding of, like, if you were a Freudian, say, maybe you would say, well, there's an id, a conscious, and a superego.
Okay.
Or ego and a superego. And so that's, you know, our id is, you know, unfettered desires and just things we want. And the superego is saying, no, no, no. And the ego is what happens because of that push and pull. That's one
right.
way you
And
could
you could map it onto
self.
Sort of the amygdala, the lizard brain.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
So, and then the higher mid and neocortex.
So that was just my example of kind of what one answer to my question could be. So how do you think of the self and how we are created through biology and thought?
Well, so I try to be realistic about that. Us academic intellectuals try to think that all decisions, all interpretations are made logically by the neocortex, by the, you know, the upper brain, which is not true.
Is that here, below the bald?
Well, don't ask me where it is exactly. Although we are, you know, anatomically accessible, having no hair, we just point right up there. But what you find is humans, no matter how intelligent they are, still make a lot of decisions based on that lower level brain.
The lizard brain.
The
you
lizard
mentioned.
Brain. The author of Pitch Anything calls it the crocodile brain. But yeah, it's that early brain that, you know, covers, you know, reflexes, but not just reflexes of, you know, breathing and your heart beating and things like that. It's also like, and this is something I finally understand about conservatives.
I cannot believe that I didn't see this coming.
No. No, I don't mean conservatives in the political sense. I mean people that are like, look, everything's fine the way it is. Don't be messing with me. That's the natural state. Your lizard brain says, because it's conditioned from, you know, tens of thousands of years of something new, it's going to eat me.
Some of us are tired, and where we are is copacetic.
But it's, so anything new, so if you're trying to pitch a very high level, whether it's a business deal or a new piece of technology, people are like, oh, it's, you know, and you use intellectual arguments, but that will not sway the lizard brain.
All right, well, let me get at this lizard
brain. So good art film actually taps into those lower level lizard brain impulses. This did not for me.
I asked about the self. Here was my summary. You started talking about
ew.
Decisions. I asked about the self, and you said, okay. Well, this is how I make choices.
What do you mean? How the self, that we could do 9 podcasts on that.
Sure. Well, let's start with the one.
Okay.
Who are you, Pete?
A middle-aged man who just swam 36 lengths in a 25-meter pool and kept that breakfast burrito from repeating on him.
So, I mean, what's the point of you? Like, how are you a person in the world? What is the essence of you? What is the ineffable essence? I guess you can't tell me.
Oh, okay.
But
so at least I am sentient and self-aware. I guess I live by a certain belief system.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in transparency. I'm a big believer in equality of opportunity. I'm not impressed by people who are like, well, I'm rich or I was born here and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I try to judge people by the way they act and not what their last name is or where they came from or these sorts of things.
So how are you a person, though? I mean, do you have, like, how do you deal with your emotions? Like, when you're angry, is that you being angry? Does anger happen to you? You know, this is...
It's me being angry. That is an integral of, you know, all my experiences. And I think that's very unique for people. So, for example, David Hu, who recently won the Ig Nobel Prize for pointing out that most animals urinate for the same duration. Fascinating fluid mechanics. He was on Inside the Black Box yesterday. And the way he discovered it is when he's angry.
Yesterday being maybe a week and a half ago.
Right. It would have been the 20th of October, so a while ago. But he counts. And a lot of people do that, count to sort of diffuse the tension,
right, right,
and things like that. So he experienced something all new parents do, and now that you have a son.
He got peed on?
He got peed on, right. So, you know, you're changing a diaper, and all of a sudden the stream hits you. And he was angry, so he started counting, you know, 1, 2, 3. And then he realized that he was amazed that such a little creature could pee for about 21 seconds or so. And then he timed himself, and then he started looking at animals, because that's what he does. He does the fluid mechanics and mechanics of animals. He's on the mechanical engineering faculty. And you would just assume that, you know, a little baby would go in 10 seconds and an elephant would take 4 minutes or something. And in fact, lo and behold, he found that almost all animals take approximately 21 seconds. So he learned it because when he's mad, he counts. Me, I'm trying to be better, but because I come from a dysfunctional family with a violent alcoholic for a father, I do yell sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That is not always constructive. At least I know that about myself. I know that's one of my many shortcomings.
So with Lost Highway, I think one of the biggest, like, keys to unlocking it, you know, to turn it into something that you can...
Wrap my head around?
Yeah, but not even wrap your head around so much as psychologically empathize with it.
Okay.
You know, like, what is the psychological truth that's happening here? You know, at a certain point in the film, Bill Pullman becomes Balthazar Getty. Oh, spoiler alert. Bill Pullman becomes Balthazar Getty in a jail cell, you know?
But, I mean, forget about the
actors.
And
they treat it literally.
The actor, the tenor sax player who's married to, what was Patricia Arquette's character? I forget, in the beginning.
Is it Renee?
Yeah, it could be Renee. And he murders her. This is all on the jacket. This is all, if you look at the IMDb summary. So he murders her, and he's locked away.
Yeah.
And by the way, they don't go into any details. So, like, happy, they're making love. A lot of dark shadows. Boom, she's bloody all over the floor. And then, boom,
you,
no trial, he's in there.
I don't think those love scenes were very happy.
No, they weren't. They weren't particularly happy. And then suddenly, magically, he turns into a young auto mechanic who lives with his parents.
And then
what the hell is going on?
In that world, they say, we don't know how your son ended up in this jail cell.
Yeah, so they assume Bill Pullman escaped and this kid ended up there. Yeah. That's a bit of a reach.
And they send him home to his dad, Gary Busey.
Yeah.
So, clearly, you shouldn't treat this film as a plot-driven, you know, what happens next story.
But that's okay.
Right?
I don't always engage in linear thinking.
I'm saying just because the guy changes into another guy,
mm-hmm.
right, that it seems to be about self, and it seems to be about what continues, right? Mm-hmm. What part? It's just like Gone Girl is about marriage. That's what Gone Girl is about. Even though the plot is about a woman who tries to set up her husband because he's been cheating on her.
The strains, the secrets, the deceptions in marriage. Yeah,
and also,
Gone Girl was a good film.
Because?
Because I got the message. The message came through. And then you start looking at your spouse like, what sort of deceptive secrets is she keeping from me? Good God, she'll try to kill me next week.
For me, I think that I am very willing to take a message that is amorphous and emotional.
I'm willing to suspend animation.
You're willing to suspend animation?
Is it suspend reality?
Or did you watch Alien too?
The oxygen gets short circuited in my brain when I swim in the morning.
Disbelief. I don't think it's about being able to accept the unreality of the movie. I'm saying that, you know, Lost Highway is like a painting in a lot of ways.
Okay.
Right? The colors are next to each other, and so you've got to say, oh, I wonder what that's about. It's not, because with a painting, I was about to say something that's stupid, so let me retract that. Some people certainly might say, well, that's painted wrong, that doesn't look good. But with abstract painting,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you approach it on its own terms, then it's very unlikely that you would say anything like, well, that's not the color that goes with that color.
You might say, I don't like it.
Exactly.
Or I don't get it. Yeah, and that's okay. And I like some abstracts and I don't like others.
So, you know, it's...
Could it be that art is personal, like a Jackson Pollock?
It's an expressive film, right? It's an expressionist film more than it is a realist film.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. And it seems to be tapping into that, you know... How do you handle trauma? How do you handle feelings of betrayal? How do you handle your world, you know, whatever your world view is or whatever your assumptions about mm-hmm. the life you're living when they start to crumble? You know, and for this guy, he literally becomes another person, you know, in the movie because of the trauma. And
that's an important theme. I think we all do that. We all transform ourselves. But this was so badly done.
You say badly done. What do you mean?
Well, first of all, I don't understand the whole murder thing in the beginning. What was the motivation? Why did this happen? I don't get it.
Well, she was cheating on him.
But he just like blacked out and slaughtered her. I think there's a stage we all go through in between. I think she's cheating on me because when I called, she wasn't home or whatever, and cutting her up with a knife in the bedroom.
So like I said,
I need a little more.
I don't. I think that's the thing.
Okay.
Like, I don't.
That's right. And you liked it. And that's okay. I think art is very personal.
The illogic of it was okay.
I'm allowed to not like it.
Absolutely. What are you doing?
I'm looking up a similar weird artsy film. It was one with Robin Williams about suicide. Do you remember that film?
Yeah. What will come? What dreams may come?
May come. Weird film. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, and bad.
And I liked it.
No, it was a terrible movie.
See, art is personal. That's it. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next week.
You're a terrible person for liking it.
I may be a terrible person. I'm not willing to debate that. It's many people have called me a terrible person.
Here's the reason I don't like What Dreams May Come. I feel like it established a very rigid set of rules.
It was more rigid,
and a spatial understanding of something that doesn't require that.
Possible.
You know, and the thing I like about Lost Highway is that it is this kind of...
There was no spatial network.
No, but it's this kind of cloud of images and interconnected thoughts. I mean, it was like a painting, and David Lynch is a painter. That's why I'm sort of stuck on that metaphor. That it's all these little flashes of imagery and sounds and connections and echoes. And by the end, you know, there's a cohesive whole that doesn't have any sort of literal one-to-one correspondence with reality, but as a maybe as a dream, it is exactly what it should be. You know, so if you read John Gardner on The Art of the Novel, he talks about the echoes. He talks about how you put images and scenarios sort of, you know, next to each other as you write the novel. You know, there's A and B, and then there's B and C, or there's A and B, and then C and D, and then E and F, and then you bring back A. So now there's A and F, and you know, like, I'm totally just I'm babbling now. So it's a
Some coherency.
Yeah, and by the end, if
I think
you
this lacked coherency. But
wait, at the end, if you've built enough of your imagery, then by returning to whatever that first thing was, the thing that's signified by A in this,
right,
then it trails along behind it all the other things it was connected to throughout the book.
Yeah.
And Lost Highway, I think, is like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what its logic is about. Are you looking up another film?
I don't know what I'm doing.
Put the phone down.
I'm looking
record
up
the podcast.
Psychologists in my local area.
Like, think about when the house, the explosion, the exploding house that's actually reversed, right? And so you see all the stuff come back into it, right? And then our hero, quote marks, goes up there, and there's nobody in it. Except for the dude. Oh, no, there's nobody in it. And he turns around, and then the dude's filming him. What's your name? You know, that kind of thing. And these are all, these aren't literal.
I didn't think they were literal
events, right?
Then it would have been really bad if this was literal.
What would you have needed, do you think, to be able to kind of sink into Lost Highway and just take on?
I guess I would need some more coherency. Maybe I am more obtuse than you are. Maybe
I don't think obtuse, no, but I think you require, just like, you know, my sense of self, right? Do you think you're a body with a brain in it, right? Or are you a
holistic?
Is
this a trick question?
No, it's not a trick question at all. I'm going back to what's your metaphor for self? Because, you know, for me, I don't know. I'm confused by the fact that I'm in a body, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm confused by the fact that I am a body, you know? I try to be at one, right? Mm-hmm. I try to be in the moment and at one. That seems to be where happiness lies. But a lot of times I'm abstracted, like deeply abstracted.
Can you give me an example of that? Like, you're sitting in the library, you're going,
Yes, all the time. No, I mean, thinking, well, let me do a counter example. So one of the things that I've found really bizarrely satisfying about, and I'm about to be gross here, and I apologize, but just bear with me.
Oh,
okay?
Please do.
I've had a couple really bad food poisoning incidents in the past few years, right? I think I've talked a little bit about them on the podcast, but, you know, one time...
I think we can all relate to that. Where you really wish you were dead at some point.
A little bit, right.
A little bit,
one time I was in a hotel room in Louisville because I was at a conference.
Yeah, you told me that. You were able to give your talk anyway. Not barf on the audience.
And not
kudos
only did I give
to
that
you.
Talk, but someone in that audience hired me to do a keynote at a another library seminar in Philadelphia. So,
no, imagine what would have happened had you not been nauseous.
Right. It would not have been as good. but yeah, I found a clear spot in the middle of like 12, 14 hours of just, oh. So I, that was happened at a conference, and then one time it happened when my family went out of town, and I was home, and I just, you know, I don't even know what it was, but I had a weekend, like a Saturday, a complete Saturday, that was just food poisoning, all the things that happen when you have food poisoning.
Yeah, it's bad.
Now, that's unpleasant. Obviously, you know, vomiting and diarrhea are really unpleasant, but... as a whole experience, there was no, like, I didn't think to myself, you know, how am I going to make enough money for my kids to go to college? I didn't worry about the cleaning the furnace filter, you know. I didn't worry about, and I got to get an oil change, and God, I don't know. I hate trying to work out the schedule. Like, I was just me, just completely contained in the moment, like, this is okay. Waiting for the 2 hours to go for the things to, you know, for everything to bubble
up.
It's
an interesting thought process when you have that.
And it just condensed me down. And the Kentucky thing, The Louisville thing. Yeah, I gave this presentation, and I had, you know, terrible sickness for 7 hours leading up to it. I was like, okay, lock it down.
The sheer force of will.
I was lucky. I was lucky that I was in the middle of a kind of calm part, and I hadn't eaten anything.
I did a PhD qualifying exam during that.
Really?
I was taking hydrocodone. For some surgery or something. No, I know what it was. It was that cough medicine when you get really bad.
You're just trying to tell me you're a heroin addict.
No, and I took this stuff, and hydrocodone has, especially when you do it on an empty stomach, which was my bad. I get vertigo. You get nauseous. So literally, you can kind of suppress the nausea by just lying on your side in the fetal position and going, kill me now.
Yeah.
And I was there, and I had like some 11 o'clock appointment to either do somebody's PhD thesis proposal or a PhD qualifying exam, where you had to sit there and listen and comment and make judgment on the student. And I'm like, I can't miss this. I have to go. So I found a window and got up and drove in, nauseous the whole way.
That's insane. Oh, God. Yeah.
And then I sat there. I'm like, okay. And the student did quite well. And then I, you know, huddled in my office for a couple hours and then drove home.
So you said the thing about please kill me, like when you're lying on your side.
It just feels so bad.
But here's the thing. Those two times, like when I was without responsibility, right, when I was just lying there in between bouts, say, I was very happy in the sense that I wasn't like, I'm happy, but I was completely at peace. Mm-hmm. I'm not normally at peace. Like, this is what I'm saying about abstract. Like, normally I'm thinking, like, even right now, there's a little bit of creeping in. I'm like thinking, oh, what am I?
But if you look at the need hierarchy, it reduced you to the lower end of the need hierarchy, right?
Which was fundamentally fulfilled.
Yeah, a roof over your head, and
I was lying in a soft bed.
Yeah, no saber-toothed tiger was trying to eat
you. In a hotel too. Like, I was completely contained.
You had food if you needed it, which you didn't want.
I didn't want it. At home, when my family was gone, I was alone in the house on a couch. I had Netflix. Right, so I watched a whole bunch of South Korean, you know, thrillers and action movies. That was great. That was really fun, you know. But so why would that be? Why would that be okay? Why would sickness make me feel contented? Right, and so I wonder about, you know, what language does to us. You know, as an animal, right? Once you bring on language and you can abstract your thought and you can actually label things and differentiate the aesthetic continuum, that kind of stuff. But I also wonder what being able to imagine that you are, like when people come up with the devil or they come up with angels or God, and now there's these outside forces that are creating or dictating their rules.
Right.
And I think that there's some kind of cleaving, right, of the self when you're able to say, oh, this terrible thing.
My fly was open. Hey, it happens. I walked all the way over here from the athletic center, the campus recreation center.
I feel like I was getting at something, Pete, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, my zipper.
What are you getting at?
You know what? So I've been on a roll. I've been on a ramble. What are you hearing? What is this making you think? Let's give it back to you.
I think in certain situations like that, when you are put in that lowest level of the need hierarchy, you're like, hey, actually, things are okay, and it's not so bad. Those experiences happen all the time.
Yeah,
they used to happen to me when I would go to Adult Children of Alcoholics meetings and hear horror stories worse than my upbringing, and I'd say, okay, my life wasn't so bad. Because there are worse, right? I mean, my father was a pretty violent dude. He used to kick the crap out of me once in a while. But I had, you know, a home and food and clothing, and I went to a decent school district, and things were okay. You know, I couldn't bring friends to my house.
Yeah.
You know, my siblings and I would complain about it all that time. But compared to somebody starving in the streets, my life was pretty good. Or compared to somebody who was, you know, sexually assaulted by their alcoholic uncle or parent or something like that, then you're like, okay.
Yeah. You know. Do you have a favorite painting?
I'm more of a sculpture guy.
What's your favorite sculpture?
The Löwendenkmal in Switzerland. I'm trying to think. Where is that? That's in Lausanne, I think.
Can you describe the sculpture?
Yeah, Löwendenkmal means lion monument. And it is a giant lion with a Swiss Guard shield and a giant thorn in its paw carved into the side of a sheer igneous rock cliff with a reflecting pool in front of it. It is imposing. You cannot help but be moved by that. And it's a tribute to the Swiss Guards who have died in, you know, incursions all over the world up to that point. That's my favorite sculpture. I like Michelangelo's David.
Most of the time, yeah, it's an incredible sculpture. Most of the time, and I've seen that in person too. Which
me
is,
too. Yeah, and what I like about it, you go around the back,
you turn the corner, and
you learn
there
two
it
things:
is.
The string of his sling traces down his back. That level of detail is amazing. Yeah. Two, David, nice ass.
It's true. I remember my breath was taken away when I walked around the corner and saw the David mm-hmm. down the hall. But that's not the point. I have, I think, a favorite painting, mm-hmm. And it's Anselm Kiefer, you know, who I got into because of my friend Mark Denard. So, hi, Mark. But I've seen, this is the one Anselm Kiefer painting I've seen in person. Mm-hmm. It's been in the High Museum. I don't know if it's still there, but I think it is. It's called Dragon, or okay. Maybe it has a few other. I would look it up, but fuck it. The painting's huge, and it's like a starry sky, but not, you mm-hmm. know. And it's just this, it's this, not monolithic, but it's this overwhelming sort of, you know, feeling made into painting, mm-hmm. right? And that, to me, that's a thing I will sit in front of and just stare at for a long time, yeah. right?
I have stared at the Löwendenkmal for an hour.
Yeah, but that's figurative art, right? I mean, it's actual, it's representing something.
Yeah, it is.
Whereas for me, this thing that really caught me for a long time, it is not representative, mm-hmm. right? And so with Lost Highway, there's a few moments in that film where sound design and the imagery and even music all combine into this kind of transcendental, you know, image. Mm-hmm. Like
that
this,
is a good experience.
Fixed
I
thing.
Do like
yeah.
that.
Like, and this is kind of a silly one, but when Patricia Arquette steps out of the car to Lou Reed's cover of This Magic Moment and sort of flips her hair, right? And it's just...
I was trying to figure out who covered that. okay, when they're in the garage, that was good. And I'm just
there
thinking,
you go, right.
Who the hell is singing This Magic Moment? I was thinking Tom Waits. Mm. But Lou Reed makes perfect sense.
So like when all the roads...
It was an edgy... You know, yeah. This Magic Moment is some... You know, This Magic... You know, who sang the original song?
I have no idea.
You know, it's a poppy song.
Yeah.
But somebody edgy like Tom Waits or Lou Reed...
Yeah.
You know, I was just waiting for the sex.
And that's when he sees
that was
this woman,
ass,
yeah. right? And it's the guy who was Bill Pullman, who is now Balthazar Getty, and yeah. he sees a woman who looks like his murdered wife, who mm-hmm. is not his wife. You know?
Yeah.
And
it had its moments.
Yeah. And that.
But then what was her porno career part? I didn't get that.
Well, there you go. I don't know what to tell you.
They're sitting around watching her in some adult film, and it's projected on the screen in a weird, funny apartment.
I think it's a snuff film, actually.
But she's still there. How did they snuff her?
And remember that the picture changes by the end. Like the two women have become one woman.
Oh, okay. So you're saying the original Bill Pullman thing was just filmed and it was all part of that snuff film?
I don't know.
Oh,
and
okay.
I kind of don't care. To try and come up with the rationale for what happens in the film, I think right. is the wrong thing to do.
Okay.
David Lynch probably has a full story in his head. That's
right.
what Lost Highway is and what each thing represents
and
to him.
And I didn't get it.
And for me, I was just like, yeah, let it wash over me, man. I'm cool with that.
Okay.
I'm down.
And so either I'm obtuse and incapable of getting it, or he did not succeed in sharing it with me. Or a combination of the two.
I think there's probably a third option.
What's the third option?
Let's record another outro.
Okay.
Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities. Why? This feels so fake.
Do it anyway.
Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Bennett Radio, and Pete Ludovus.
Or you can find us on the back porch of Rocky Mountain Pizza in Midtown Atlanta drinking cheap beer.